Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to my beautiful planet Earth. I want to welcome you to It's All About You, the radio program that is celebrating life, prosperity, and unlimited potential. And I'm your host, I'm Darian Marshall. And as always, when Monday comes around, I'm all excited because I get to share with you some fascinating information, usually from fascinating guests. And it's just fun all around. My guest today is Rick Heller, and he is author of the book Secular Meditation, 32 Practices for Cultivating Inner Peace, Compassion, and Joy. So we're just going to get right into the show and welcome Rick. Hi, Rick. How are you today?
Hey, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. Just so glad to join me on my show. I know you're so busy. And for those of you who are listening, you can go to www.rickheller.com and look at all the information and exciting things that's going on over there. But don't turn me off. Just minimize me and continue to listen, and you can check out some of the things going on over there at the website. And I'm going to mention that throughout the rest of the show. Okay, so first of all, congratulations on your new book.
Thank you.
Secular Meditation. Now, when I first got the book, it was a beautiful book, and I noticed the title, Secular Meditation. It's like bringing two things together. It was a little odd at first, but in a weird way, sort of refreshing.
Yeah.
Where did the idea come from for you for secular meditation?
Well, I've been leading meditation for about 6 years at a place called the Humanist Community at Harvard. So it's a place that actually caters to students at Harvard who are not religious, and actually the broader community in the Boston area. And my own background is in meditation, as I really learned it about 30 years ago, just a simple breath meditation. Subsequently, I've learned from some Buddhist sources about various types of meditation. But in the community that I participated in, people are, they've left religion, and they don't really like things that, shall I say, are too religious. So I've tried to sort of strip everything down, just make it kind of like an exercise, just like yoga has become a form of exercise, and just like calisthenics are a form of exercise. So even though meditation comes from these religious sources, I've focused on just the things, the practices that seem to work, and there's actually some scientific evidence for it as well.
Oh, cool. Because at first, that's what I said earlier, the idea of secular meditation. It was a little refreshing because even though I know what meditation is and what's behind it, even when I hear the word right away, my mind goes off to, you know, people humming in dark rooms and glowing candles, and I like those things, but a lot of people get a little creeped out over that. Do you lose anything in meditation when we bring the two together like that?
Well, I think it depends how it's done, but for me, the particular practice within Buddhism that I got a lot from is called insight meditation, and it's people who lived or traveled in Southeast Asia and then brought those practices to the United States. And this insight tradition actually already sort of stripped down a lot of the, let's say, Asian cultural traditions and tried to focus on the practices. And I've pretty much taken it, I guess, one step further, you could say. And I just sort of tweaked the wording a little bit. For instance, I have a loving kindness meditation, and in a traditional practice, often it sounds a little bit like a prayer. So the people in my community, I thought might be a little bit averse to that. So I tweaked the wording a little bit, so it's clear that it works without you don't have to request anything from any sort of higher power. It's actually the potential within ourselves and within our brain to achieve these meditative states.
Mm-hmm. Well, why is it, I've always wanted to know from the different meditators, why is it that we are able to cultivate, like you say with your book, inner peace, compassion, joy, just a good overall feeling by getting quiet? Exactly what's taking place?
Well, I've actually looked a little bit into the inner voice. So actually, if you experience, if you do meditation about 20 minutes or so, and maybe not the first time, but after a few times, you'll find that the inner voice seems to become quiet. Instead of this sort of loud inner chatter, it might kind of go down to a whisper. And There's some reason, there's actually some research on how that occurs. There's an area in the brain called the default mode network. It's actually more than one area. It's a few different areas that work together that when we're not actually focused on a task, it's always looking around for something else to do, and it actually involves spontaneously generating inner speech to suggest what should I do next. Mm-hmm. When you meditate, you're focusing on an object like the breath, or it could be sound or a candle, whatever it is. And by paying attention, you sort of starve that area, the default mode network of attention, shall we say. So it actually kind of quiets down, and it's constant attempting to suggest do this, do that. It just actually becomes more quiescent. So there's actually some research on how that occurs.
Yeah, it's funny. And I'm not making this up for the show. This really happened. I bought a fire pit because I just had a little barbecue the other day. And I'm a maniac when it comes to putting things together. I mean, those things will sit in the corner for years because I'm afraid to try to put things together. And I tried to do it. I was frustrated. The cat wouldn't leave me alone. So I just sat still. I put all that junk on the floor, and I just sat on the couch for about 20 minutes, breathed deep, took my time. And I actually visualized myself putting it together.
Hmm.
Then I sat with the instructions and everything, and lo and behold, I put it together in 20 minutes. And at the party, we had a great time. We had out on the patio and everything.
I'll have to try that.
Yeah. So even when it comes to things like that, because you know, I get jumpy over things like putting the things together, it actually calmed me down so I can just focus on what I was doing. And I had confidence that I would definitely put it together eventually. So, yeah, it can even work that way.
Yeah, one of the practices I talk about in the book is mindful manual labor. So we're just coming to the end of leaf raking season here in New England, and I've been doing a lot of raking leaves, which I actually enjoy. When I do that, I am paying attention to the sights of the colors of the leaves on the ground, the sound of they kind of crinkle a little bit as you rake them. And there's a little bit of an aroma, so it becomes a kind of meditation, actually.
Oh yes. Now for you, what made you take up meditation in the first place?
As I mentioned in the book, quite some time ago, I was having a problem with pain, and it was really eye strain, but I didn't really understand quite how it worked, and it was getting worse and worse. And finally, I went to a doctor. I lived in San Francisco at the time. I went to UCSF, University of California, San Francisco Medical School, and an ophthalmologist told me that my eyes were fine, but that I'd become hypersensitive to pain by just focusing on it. So by bringing attention and aversion to a stimulus, just these minor irritations from the eyes, you can actually amplify pain. And subsequently, I have also learned that if you can bring attention but with an accepting or even friendly attitude toward things that are irritating, it actually neutralizes it. And so at the time when I had this experience, the doctor kind of gave me this understanding, and it really helped. It had nothing exactly to do with meditation, but at that point, I started to see how my own stress was affecting me, and that's when I opened my mind to consider meditation, and I subsequently learned breath meditation at that point.
Very good. If you're just tuning in, I'm having a great conversation with Rick Heller, and he's author of the book Secular Meditation, 32 Practices for Cultivating Inner Peace, Compassion, and Joy. Now, Rick, you say that happiness is generated internally and doesn't depend much on external circumstances. Can you expand on that a little bit for us?
Yeah, so the basics that you need for happiness is your basic physical health. So you do need enough food. You have to have a shelter, be a place to sleep, and I would say some basic health care. But once you have that, you actually have the resources to make the shifts in your own mind and brain to achieve happiness. And this is these sort of shifts require, the reason I say about food and sleep is these shifts in the brain require glucose or blood sugar. And if your blood sugar is low, you actually really can practice these shifts. But if you are in kind of have those basic needs, then you can use practices such as loving kindness meditation to learn to have a friendly, accepting attitude toward other people and even to other things, inanimate objects. As you walk down the street, you don't have to make judgments, oh, this is kind of dirty, I don't like this. You can actually be accepting and friendly toward the experiences that you encounter.
Very nice. Thank you. Now, in your book, you revise the Serenity Prayer for non-believers. How does that fit in with the theme of secular meditation? That Serenity Prayer, is that the one with the grant me the, how does that go?
Exactly. So the Serenity Prayer in its popular form goes back to an American minister, Reinhold Niebuhr, and he actually got it from his understanding of the ancient Greek Stoic practices. So in its original form, it really wasn't a prayer. He put it in the prayer form, and I'm sort of taking it back out and just kind of making a statement. In doing this, this is not a kind of a Buddhist thing. This is more so because of my humanist background, I'm kind of looking at what I learned from this Buddhist tradition critically, and I don't accept everything. And so specifically, I do think that Buddhist philosophy sometimes says to be can sometimes be too accepting. And sometimes there are, issues like social justice where you say something's wrong and it needs to be changed. So, and you don't want to accept it. But you can have, at that point, you can understand, you can have the courage in the logic of the Serenity Prayer. You can have the courage to encounter this. You know that you're actually going to suffer, perhaps, because you're going to fight for change. But you also know that, you know, if you accepted it, maybe you wouldn't suffer as much. And then you have to have the wisdom to say, is this the right thing that I should be challenging? Is this something for, so for instance, there are certain, negative things. Obviously, we all die eventually. So we want to live as long as we can in a healthy way, but we have to actually bring acceptance to that inevitability. But at the same time, we can try to make changes so that we live as long as possible, as healthy as possible.
Now, for someone who wants to get started in meditation, do you have any recommendations how to get started?
People start with a breath meditation. I actually find it a little bit, it can be a little bit difficult, actually, surprisingly. And I start the book with a loving-kindness meditation, mm-hmm. which is something where you think about people who have helped you over your life, and you cultivate this sort of warm feeling. You think about yourself, and then you actually think a person we call a neutral person, a person you don't know very well. Mm-hmm. Could be the person who you bought coffee from this morning at Starbucks, and you see if you can actually redirect the warm feelings toward them. And most people find they can. And so that's actually a very rewarding meditation. It doesn't require you to quiet the mind, because that's something people find challenging at first. And so I start with these sort of compassion and loving kindness meditations, and then go afterward into the breath meditation.
Cool. Now, some people will they'll accuse people who are into meditation as being self-centered. Like, you think you're so wonderful and godly that you have to meditate and ignore everyone else. Is that being self-centered when we meditate?
Well, I think meditation does, help people who are suffering to feel better. So I think that's a reasonable thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that and this is again another reason to start with it is that these loving kindness and compassion practices are a little bit more, shall we say, extroverted. They help you kind of think about other people as well as yourself. Ultimately, I think the path, if you practice these, you'll end up you progress in it, you'll kind of end up in a good place. And you may actually need to kind of get yourself together first before you can help others.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't sort of judge people one way or another. But I do think that these sort of loving kindness and compassion practices are a good way to start. And they're kind of social, too, because it makes you think about other people in a nice way.
Mm-hmm. Now, the benefits of walking meditation, exactly, I don't even, what is that anyway? I kind of have an idea.
Well, if you go into a long meditation retreat, you if you're going to be let's say for a whole day, you can't sit for a whole day. It's not good for you. So typically, people alternate between sitting for let's say 45 minutes and then walking for 20 minutes or so, kind of get to stretch legs. And in the most minimal type of walking meditation, you are simply paying attention to the feeling of your feet touching the floor. I actually like something. I have some meditations there where you're actually walking in the woods, you're doing a hike, and I would start, say, by doing a breath meditation, on a rock. You find a rock, nice little rock, sit down for 10 minutes or so, do a breath meditation to kind of quiet the mind, and then walk in the woods and open yourself up to the things around you. So what becomes meditative is when you're in the moment, paying attention to what is going around you, as opposed to sometimes when you walk, you're thinking about what's going on in the office. So if you can actually be present in the place you're walking, that can be meditative.
Now, being mindful of the present, and I know a lot of meditation teachers. Matter of fact, I teach a small group of meditation. I'm always telling them to be in the present. Does that mean we're ignoring the future, in your opinion?
I get into that a little bit, and I think it's okay for the most part. But So mindfulness is often defined as paying attention to what is going on in the present moment with a friendly, non-judgmental attitude.
Yes.
Of the two, I actually think the friendly, non-judgmental attitude is key, because if you take that element can actually apply to the future. Because sometimes you do have to plan, well, what am I going to – I have your work. There may be something you actually have to do, let's say, in 4 hours. So you have to think through that. You can always bring this accepting – non-judgmental attitude. You can't always be in the present. I think there's some subtleties to it, so I do kind of go into the book. It's good to be in the present most of the time, and I would say if you are thinking about the future, mostly do that when you're intending to think about the future. The problem sometimes is when people's minds are getting away from them, and that's where worries come, where they're just thinking about the future when they don't really even, and about how bad it could be, when they don't even want to. But there certainly are times when you might want to really set aside some time to actually think about the future. In fact, I even have a meditation I call intentional daydreaming, where you're setting aside some time to just envision how your life could be in the future. But you're bringing this attitude of kindness toward it.
I'm speaking with Rick Heller, author of the book Secular Meditation, 32 Practices for Cultivating Inner Peace, Compassion, and Joy. And to find out more, visit his website at rickheller.com. You know, I really love this book because you seem to cover all the different areas of meditation and the different thoughts that may come up in our minds as we read the book. You cite some health risks associated with meditation. Now, what are they? I think that's great.
Well, I don't think there's really any risk with a 20-minute meditation, let's say. But people who attend a week-long silent meditation, there have been cases where people actually do have some serious health outcomes. And it usually is people who have had a prior trauma and may have PTSD. And sometimes when they get to quiet the mind, it actually sort of quiets the parts of the brain that have been repressing the trauma, and the traumas come up. So the sort of thing that I go into my book, the 20-minute meditations, I've never heard of any serious problem for anything like that. And I would also say that, you know, if you do start to feel uncomfortable with one type of meditation, try another. The problems only occur with these longer meditations, and it's really like a form of exercise. You wouldn't start to lift 400 pounds on the first day.
Right.
You have to build yourself up.
Yes. I'm glad you mentioned that. You know, I did a little. I taught a class once, and part of the class was a meditation segment, and we got really quiet. And I hate to sound weird, but I really like sort of easy, quiet-sounding music that has a little kind of a weird tinge to it. And I brought some of that music for, and one of the women in the group started screaming. And I almost lost it. I didn't know what was going on, you know, and all the old thoughts. Because, you know, I was always taught meditation might bring demons in your mind, something like that. So I don't know if she was just being dramatic or just feeling the music of what it was. But for some reason, that just keeps creeping up in my mind. Even when I do the group, she just started screaming. So she just felt like screaming. Like, what is that when a person does that?
Well, I really don't know about the case. I haven't experienced that, but I will address this sort of issue. Sometimes I've heard that expression, the idle mind is the devil's playground.
Right.
I wouldn't say a meditation is idle in that sense, because you're actually focused, you're paying attention on a certain particular thing. There's a long history, and you might say a curriculum of how you go about this. And I think the sort of idle mind that can lead to problems is when there isn't a sense of values. There's no sense of, let's say, discipline. And meditation is something that teaches people discipline, because you're paying attention to the breath, let's say, and every time you lose focus, you bring yourself back to the breath. So that's actually something, a kind of a way of building focus and discipline.
Yeah, because you're actually doing something. You're not just sitting there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That makes a lot of sense. Well, that makes me feel better. Again, I don't know what was going on with her, but I do remember that happened. It was a little creepy. And again, if you're just tuning in on the show, I'm speaking with Rick Heller, and he's author of the book Secular Meditation, 32 Practices for Cultivating Inner Peace, Compassion, and Joy. And the website is rickheller.com. I wanted to read right on the front of your cover by Rick Hansen. He's author of the book Hardwiring Happiness and Buddha's Brain. And the comment he has on the front of your book, he says it's grounded in solid research on the brain and physical and mental health, and full of practical ideas and methods. This friendly, down-to-earth guide is a wonderful resource for both beginners and long-time meditators. And I'm telling you, the word friendly really sticks out. Again, I'm not just being cute. As I was going through the book, it really does have a friendly feel to it. It doesn't feel like you're giving us medicine. It doesn't feel like, you know, I need to be in the library to read. I could even read it on the bus. Part of your goal in putting it together? Like, the feel is there. It's really there.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I'm trying to kind of put this practice I guess when I was writing it, I'm sort of envisioning that, because I do lead a meditation group. So, you know, when we do this, we do try to welcome people. We do our meditation, and then we have a discussion afterward, and people can share how the meditation went. And we definitely try to bring this friendly attitude toward the people we are there. And so in writing this book, I kind of envision the reader as being someone I'm inviting into this group, shall we say.
That's pretty good. You know, it's funny because first time I ever met you, but as I hear you talking, I can hear you in the book. Like, it makes sense. If that makes any sense to you.
Yeah.
It's like, as I'm talking to you, you sound familiar because you're really in your book. I think that's fantastic.
Cool.
Oh, you're there. Okay, I didn't know if you heard me. Are you, I wanted to mention, based on the information, you're somewhat skeptical of Buddhist views on enlightenment and things like that. Can you share a little more with that?
Yeah, there's a few different views on enlightenment, but one reason people cite to be skeptical is actually World War II. And in Japan, there were many Zen leaders who were considered to be enlightened and were nevertheless enthusiastic supporters of the Japanese war effort. And that raises the question of, well, okay, what does the enlightenment mean, and does that mean you have good ideas, shall we say? I do think that there is a certain state that if you people report that they've meditated for years and years, it changes the way they have a sense of their own self. I had not meditated at that level of depth to have experienced that, So I accept that there is something that occurs for the people who have meditated in great depth for a long period, but I'm not sure that that is necessarily something that should be even the average person's goal. I'm just sort of skeptical about that.
Yeah.
But what I do think is good is the idea of bringing this friendly attention to other people and actually all the experiences we have, so even inanimate objects, and try to live our lives with a basically friendly, welcoming attitude to most of what happens, except for the few really harmful things we may encounter that we really, you know, need the courage to change. But for the most part, you know, there's so many people who live certainly in the Western developed countries. We have so much more than our ancestors ever had, and there's so much that we can be grateful toward.
Well, believe it or not, our party is just about over. Another 30 seconds, 45 seconds. I want to thank you so much for joining me tonight. This was really, really good.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this conversation.
And congratulations. I mean, the book, seriously, is really a beautiful book. Physically, the feeling of it as you're reading it, it's really a friendly book. That's the only word I can think of, friendly. And
thank
important.
You.
Yeah, so thank you for being you and putting that out there for us.
Thanks for
what you've been listening to, It's All About You, the radio program that is celebrating life, prosperity, and unlimited potential. And I'm your host, I'm Darian Marshall, and my guest today was Rick Heller. He is author of the book, Secular Meditation, 32 Practices for Cultivating Inner Peace, Compassion, and Joy. And I'm telling you, it's really a good book. It's very friendly and warm. It's a book you're probably going to want to go through over and over and over again. Just keep it by your bedside. It's really a great thing to have. So I look forward to being with you next week, and just want to wish you a great week. And until then, and so it is.